Kaya Biz with Kukuletu Mfupi from 6 to 7 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Our public finances are dangerously overstretched. Our borrowing requirement will remain well above 500 billion rand in each year of the medium term, despite the modest improvements in our fiscal position. Consequently, gross loan debt will increase from 3.95 trillion in the current fiscal year to 5.2 trillion in 2023-24. We owe a lot of people a lot of money. This includes foreign investors in our bond market, pension funds, local and foreign banks, unit trusts, financial corporations, insurance companies, the PIC, and ordinary South African bond holders.
A very important note, Afropolitans, to hear from the finance minister for today. We're talking all things budget. He's made it very clear this is not an austerity budget. And when it comes to austerity, that's literally a tightening of the belt where any kind of unnecessary expenditure is not undertaken. That's not where we are, given what the finance minister said. But it is clear that we've got a terrible debt situation, as we owe a lot of people a lot of money. Let's get a synopsis of the budget speech, as there's quite a bit to delve into. And we start off by speaking to Ulumkile Mondi, a familiar face and voice when it comes to all themes economics, from the School of Economics and Finance at Wits University. Bob Mondi, welcome to the show and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, Kuku, and to all the Afropolitans listening this evening.
There's a lot to get through in terms of the numbers, but I think from a high-level point of view, give us some of your highlights as well as some of the key concerns that came through in the speech this afternoon.
My highlight was the re-emphasis on the president's commitment to a recovery that is private sector-led. So basically cutting taxes for corporates from 28 to 27, announcing that ports, both land ports such as the border entries, Bed Bridge and many others around us, but also the seaports, all the way from Richards Bay down to Saldanha, those ports, government is looking at mobilizing what they call blended finance with private sector in terms of private-public partnerships. So really, this is a huge shift by NEC government, where private sector is now at the center of South Africa's economic development, where in fact, in the past 15 years, in fact, when under Mbeki, the last term, it was very clear that our development would be state-led, whether it was Eskom then or Transnet and many others. So this is an admission, I think, by Dito and our president that, you know, the state actually is not capable of rolling out huge infrastructure. The state is very scared about the debt that's accumulated, as Mr. Mboweni was saying in the clip, that is going to really look elsewhere by leaning on the private sector to drive economic growth. Meaning basically what we're going to be seeing is that companies doing extremely well and hopefully jobs will be created, but my biggest fear is widening gap, because we know that jobs aren't going to be coming quickly. Therefore, we may see widening of inequality and continuous marginalization and people stuck in poverty. So the announcement, the lack of announcement of a long-term income support to the poor remains a concern. Even cutting wages to the public sector, because he's promising that the next deal, which is being negotiated at the moment, is going to lead to a lower public sector wage bill, which is about, I think next year, we're looking at about 144 billion rand cut around the public sector wage. We need a time where we need nurses, we need teachers. If we're going to train and healthy, productive South Africans who can really take us out of the mess that we're in. So it's a bit confusing in that regard. Thank you.
I also want to get your thoughts in terms of both elements that you highlighted. Infrastructure spend ties in very clearly with South Africa's economic reconstruction and recovery plan, which was launched in October last year. And even the reduction of the public sector wage bill has long been a stone in National Treasury's shoe in terms of how to manage. The challenge that I also find with the minister's speech is that there were no clear deadlines as to how and when these particular guidances would be offered. Does that also pose a challenge in terms of clear direction, in terms of boosting growth and confidence?
Absolutely. I think the private sector is looking at South Africa. So you know what? We like the speech about the president in the State of the Nation address and what Mr. Mboweni has said. However, if you scratch below, we know that we continue having power cuts in South Africa. We've been having them for the past 12, 13 years, and there's been no solution. So because there is reluctance by one of Mr. Mboweni's cabinet colleague to mobilize new deployment of capacity by other companies outside government. So this is but one example. We can take it to other areas as well, where we need to do more by mobilizing private sector, but we haven't done much. So really, the challenge, I think, for Tito and the president is the inability to rein in ministers. You know, the president and Minister of Finance said such wonderful words, but they can't rein in ministers. So ministers continue spending. We know that in the defense, if you look in the defense budget, it's going to be cut going forward. But we know it was propaganda from Cuba, which we didn't know when it was budgeted. So there's all lots of ill-discipline in terms of spending that we see coming out from ministers. So coming back to your question around the timetable, the only timetable which was very clear was around the restructuring of Eskom, where we'll have an ESMO, that is the market operator, by next year, by 2022. And then by 2024, we'll have a complete restructuring of Eskom. Already, the CEO, Andre De Rete, has already restructured it. He's chairing the three entities, but you need them now moving and having independent regulators and independent players outside Eskom. Still state-owned, but being operated outside Eskom. So I'm hoping those timelines might be met. But in other areas, it's very difficult. I mean, he's walking on broken bottles, and he's scared of being cut to walk them through. So it's tough.
Just to close off with very briefly, I'm keen to get your views on the GDP growth profiles and objectives that have been laid out. 3.3% for 2020. And if we go back to the National Development Plan, we know that this sets us far, far off the track when it comes to the 2030 gold objectives that we have.
So, I mean, South Africa doesn't have its potential is just under 3%. That is, if we're to utilize all our resources, we'll probably achieve about 2.5-2.6%. 3% would be sort of a mini bonus. We need to be growing double that figure at about 6% to have a dent on unemployment and improve livelihoods. So that requires a complete different macroeconomic framework that has been suggested by many, that maybe South Africa should be, instead of looking at restricting its budget deficit from where it is now, just under 14%, 13.8%, it needs to expand it more and at least even debt, borrow more up to levels of about 100% to fund infrastructure and other areas, because those will lead to more production than will outperform our current capacity because of building capacity, and therefore grow 6%. So that debate really, I think the Treasury just ignored it and continued the way it's done business before. Hence, some of my colleagues are still criticizing that this is an austerity budget.
Do you think it's an austerity budget, very briefly, yes or no?
Yes, to the extent that, you know, the government is cutting spending and relying on private sector, and we know they never came to the party after 1994. What will make them come to the party when they're faced government that is incapacitated, that takes 20 years to make decisions, and really every spending that they do, there is some malfeasance that takes place. So these are the real realities that you face. So in that regard, yes, one might argue that is a case for arguing that austerity.
Thank you so much for your feedback, and we appreciate that view in terms of understanding where the budget is, some of the major concerns that have been highlighted. That was Lumkile Mondi from the School of Economics and Finance at Wits University, giving us some perspective in terms of the budget speech. As highlighted, a lot of malfeasance and corruption that usually takes place when it comes to our spending, and nothing highlighted in terms of how best we'll continue to curb corruption in South Africa. Lots more elements that we're going to discuss, Afropolitans. Keep dialing in and sharing your thoughts, specifically in terms of if the budget resonates with you. Are you someone who actually receives a social grant? Are you happy with the 1.6% increase? Give us a call. 086-000-959.
Kaya Biz with Kokoletho Mfuphi on Kaya FM 95.9.
Still talking all things budget, Afropolitans, and we're keen to get your thoughts in terms of your reaction to the budget. The finance minister made it very clear it's not an austerity budget, but we're hearing from some analysts that perhaps it is one. Overly reliant on growth and support to come from the private sector, and of course cutting back on certain levels of expenditure. Austerity, as we know, is defined as difficult economic conditions created by government measures to reduce public expenditure. Is that where we are? Well, to help us understand this so much more, and of course even give us feedback in terms of tax collection and the debt that we have in South Africa, we're joined on the line by Professor Nhlanhla Mbatha. He's from the Institute of Social and Economic Research at Rhodes University. Prof, a very good evening and welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening, Goku. Welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
We're always excited to speak to you, and I think I'll sneak in my first question being, if you believe that this is an austerity budget, despite what the finance minister says?
No, I don't think it is an austerity budget. I think, no, I don't think so. There's lots of allocated spending. The minister did not try to sort of, because normally that's what austerity is, just limiting measures, on especially social spending. So, no, I don't think so. I thought it was for the situation that we are in. I thought that it was reasonable. It was sensible in many ways. But looking forward to how it's being executed, I think that's where the risks are.
Let's talk about execution, and maybe starting off with the theme around revenue collection shortfall. That's a very important element of the budget. But from what we understand, it seems as though mixed reactions about how this historical shortfall will be managed.
Yes. So this was not expected. I mean, I think a growing debt that was always expected given the impacts of COVID. But I don't think that we did expect that from what we thought would collect. We collected less in terms of tax revenues of more than 200 billion in shortfall. That just means that so now we budgeted for money that will not be coming through. I think the implications, or rather the signal for me for this, is that we don't really understand as yet the impact, the true impacts of COVID-19 on the economy itself. Hence, our estimates of what we would collect from taxpayers were not accurate. That's one thing. The other thing I think is that there could have been opportunities for a number of taxpayers to avoid or evade paying tax obligations. So I think it is important that these are investigated and we have a clear picture of what has happened or of what is happening.
I'm also keen to understand the debt element. As we know, managing debt, even for a personal budget, is quite an extensive exercise. From a national point of view, this is of great concern because it is expected to stabilize at 88.9% of GDP, which is still substantial. If every 88 cents of what rand that we earn is going to be paid off to debt, that does put us in a bit of a compromising situation.
Yes, and this is what we always, always have been for the last decade. We've been worried about this. It has been increasing. 5 years ago, it was spending at around 60%. We were worried as we were going into junk status being rated by these institutions. Now we've close to 90% of GDP.
That means that we've got a debt of more than 5 trillion rand. If this is not arrested soon, we will soon be owing more than we are worth as a country. And the problem of paying debt really is about servicing the interest, paying back the interest. If it becomes more expensive to pay back the interest, obviously we would never get to a point where we pay off the debt because we are busy paying off the interest. And that's when countries often go over their fiscal cliff. So for us, we have to be careful, monitor ourselves and what is being put forward as interventions to try and take a step back away from this 88.9%. Back to figures that we were sort of more comfortable with, around 50% of GDP going to debt. So really it's how we service the debt that's the main important thing, or if or not we can afford to pay off the interest.
I'm keen just to go back to that term that you used, fiscal cliff. For those of us who aren't inclined with the technical terminology, what does that mean and what's the worst case scenario if we don't manage our debt correctly as a country? Individually, we know that what happens, you get blacklisted, you go to a credit bureau, you try to debt consolidate. For a country, what actually happens when you struggle with your debt?
Just, in your household, or what I term kitchen economics, imagine you get to a point where you just go bankrupt. You can't pay and you get things get repossessed. Basically, that's what a fiscal cliff is for a country, and the debt, trying not being able to pay off the debt that we own to all these institutions. Then what's most likely to happen is that we're going to default. So trying to spend, trying to raise more funds from borrowing is going to be impossible. So we don't want to get ourselves into that situation. So we have to be vigilant as citizens in holding government responsible and in how we service this debt. So it's very important for us to watch all the sort of loopholes that our fiscals can fall into, so that we ensure that we've got enough money to allocate for the responsible spending, and also to be able to get ourselves out of the debt.
The very tough position that we're actually in, and that needs to be managed properly. We've touched on revenue, we've touched on debt. Let's talk about spending for a moment. And like with any budget, some of these items usually change from year to year depending on the demand. Quite clearly, vaccines are quite an important role, 10 billion being allocated to that rollout. Infrastructure, that's also receiving just over 700 billion rand in terms of investment there. And also, interesting allocation for youth employment. Give us your thoughts on these particular line items that we're spending on, and is our focus still correct on being on some of these items?
So definitely infrastructure for me has always been, is a very important aspect for us in an economy that's being managed by trying to use the demand side, activate demand side of spending in the right sectors to ensure that we stimulate growth. So that's very important, and there's that amount of money is probably a fit for the job. No question whether or not that was the right decision. I think it is the right decision. The worry for me, though, is that this money does not go into waste, and it can go into waste, for example, if they are inefficiently managed projects, which could result in negative returns and we don't get what we're trying to invest on. There's also the always standing question of corruption. And this is not just a problem for South Africa, it's a problem for the continent. And I think corruption alone probably stands as one key factor that has stood in the way of many African countries in getting out of economic difficulties. So we have to watch ourselves. We have to, in our minds, in our psyche, as a society, we have to know that corruption equals jail time. But I was kind of reassured to an extent by the spending on trying to get the procurement procedures realigned, so that there is a better way of monitoring how the money is being allocated and is being used for different projects. So that's a good sign. But by itself, it doesn't mean that we would have solved the problems that that come from corruption or inefficient project management. You know, I like to use the sort of analogy of how in village communities, people are very much aware of. I mean, if you try to steal cattle, for example, from communities, mm-hmm. your neighbors would not keep quiet. But it's very strange that as a society, we've lost that mentality of looking after our common resources by ensuring that there are no thieves amongst us.
Yeah.
So people keep quiet, you know, they don't report on people they suspect that are committing economic crimes. In fact, they want to partake in those crimes if they see that people are benefiting from those to the detriment of the whole community. So we need to get back to that mindset. Where we actually check on one another, on our neighbors, we report things we suspect to be crime, economic crimes, because ultimately the effect is on the whole country and affects everybody. The spending of 11 billion rand on youth employment, I think that's great. I mean, youth employment is probably one of the biggest political risks for any country where you find that your youth does not have jobs. And then people are attracted to criminal activities. I mean, we see this a lot in North African countries where the youth go into join terrorist organizations because a lot of them are not employed. But I would have liked for this youth employment program to have associated with it a training for accessible technical skills. I think our youth need training on trades, and to become artisans that can be easily linked to jobs and self-employment as well. So I think spending on youth unemployment needs to be aligned with technical skills training, especially for the youth that are dropping out of school, which is probably going to be worse after COVID.
Quite concerning, and you raise a number of elements that we certainly need to zone in on. Prof, we'll leave it there for today, but thank you kindly for your contribution to the conversation. That's Professor Nhlanhla Mbatha from the Institute of Social and Economic Research at Rhodes University, and highlighting very important things. It's not just about the numbers, but how the numbers also influence societal changes. And speaking of societal changes, we shift the conversation now to focus on tax, something that is quite contentious, and as we know, one of the two things in life that are guaranteed, death and taxes. We've heard announcements from the finance minister to actually reduce the corporate tax rate, but seeing a lot of responses of that, and one of our very own colleagues within the speaking fraternity and a business consultant, Uspiwe Moyo, joins us now on the line, who's actually tweeted earlier about the corporate tax rate. And Uspiwe, great to have you with us on the show. Maybe let's start off with your comments about the corporate tax being reduced from 28% to 27%. You raised some concerns about this in your tweet earlier.
Thank you so much. It puzzles me, to be honest with you. I remember in the last few years when we in surplus territory, and also when the deficit was not as bad as it is now, people have been lobbying Treasury to actually reduce the corporate tax rate, and they've obviously refused for a few years. And now that we're in a very tight fiscal position, we're having corporate tax being reduced. It just doesn't make sense to me. If you look at the surplus that we're having now, I think we're having a surplus of around 12.3% or something along those lines. It doesn't make sense that you would give corporates this huge relief in a place when we're having a surplus. Obviously, the idea is that you want to, you know, stimulate corporates to be able to spend a little bit of money, get jobs going, but I think I don't think that's the right way to do it. Instead, I think if you were to focus on the companies, the small businesses that were struggling, some of the small businesses that didn't even survive COVID, to provide some help there.
Yes.
Because if you're making profit, you're probably going to absorb, you probably could absorb the current tax rate that we're in, but the companies that are not in profit territory or those that have closed the restaurant industries and so on, I think those are the ones that need help.
Very valid point there, and I can believe it and understand that given your area of expertise and the views that you have. But Putspiwa, I'll tell you what, we'll speak to a tax expert to give us some thoughts and maybe alternative suggestions that can be considered by the Minister and National Treasury going forward. But thank you so much for your tweet, for your time, and for giving us your feedback this evening. That's Uspiwe Moyo, Afropolitan's entrepreneur, speaker, as well as a business consultant, giving us some thoughts in terms of the concerns with the tax. To tell us more now in terms of the insight that we received regarding the change in the corporate tax and what it means as well for us as personal income tax brackets have changed, we joined on the line by CEO of BTMT Capital and Group CEO of NetFest, Busisiwe Mgeche. Sis Busi, good to touch base with you again. I know you're under pressure for time, but let's maybe start off with your response on the corporate taxes being decreased by 1%. Was this the right move, and will this actually encourage businesses to remain operational and profitable?
Google, we can start by saying corporate income tax did not increase, right? It stayed at 28%. Sorry, did not decrease. It's only going to decrease from the 2023 tax year of assessment. So if you look at the budget, if you read it carefully, it says starting from 1 April 2022, the year of assessment starting on the 1st of April 2022. That means it will be for the year that ends in 2023. So for the next 2 years, we are still sitting on 28%. Now, the reason for this, I guess, is trying to stimulate growth and improve economic competitiveness, but that is something that will only be realized in the next 2 years. But, you know, the reason is also reduced this. It's something that should have been done a long time ago. I understand we need to increase our tax base, but our current income tax is very high according to international standards. So this is something that should have been considered a long time ago. But I liked what the previous speaker said when he said, this only benefits big and profitable entities. What about the ones that are already sitting in the lowest position, but the ones that are already impacted by COVID? But, you know, looking at this, this budget overall, what I liked about it is it appeared to have strong interventions. You know, he's not only talking about industrialization, but he's talking about implementation programs, and he's giving us updates. You know, last year, there were a lot of programs that were introduced. Like, for example, they spoke about the Operation Green, which was launched last year. Now he's telling us about key structural reforms. That's a big update. You know, he's telling us about the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, which is something they had said, the president actually of the country had said, we're going to have this plan to intensify the participation of small businesses.
Yes, and no mention of it this year.
Yes, but now, you know, what they are doing, they're saying to us, these things will be rolled out, there will be budgets, you know, because last year it was all just a wish list, you know. So now it's just updates to say, whatever that we had said or we had enticed you with last year, we are definitely going to roll out. Think of the presidential employment stimulus program, where the president said he would want to see like an increase in the number of, or actually the decrease in unemployment by making sure that about 800,000 jobs are created, you know, by the end of 2021. Now they are telling us that 100 billion rand has been invested towards that plan. So for me, that is an update. So what we should expect then next year is for the Minister of Finance to sit and say to us, regarding those jobs, 800,000 jobs that we have promised you, you know, we managed to create so much, you know, this is how we have utilized this 100 billion. Now, back to revenue. So for all this to happen, we need to increase our tax base and that, which is a challenge because, like we said, the corporate income tax did not increase. And then when you look at the personal income tax has just increased that bracket by 5%, which is around inflation. But if you remember, when you look at the taxpayers that we have in South Africa, we have less than 7 million taxpayers over the population of around, say, 60 million. So that's a very small tax base already. You know? And there are very rich tax incentives in South Africa. And again, the super wealthy people, if we had increased this tax, like the tax rate, the super wealthy would have been sort of discouraged because in 2017 they were hit hard by that 45% bill. And again, there would be sort of possible immigration, because now these are people who could afford to live elsewhere. I guess for now we could just thank this lockdown because then everyone is forced to stay at home.
Exactly.
But again, what he didn't mention, which I thought he was going to address, is the issue of those who work outside of South Africa. Because remember last year, he was very hard on them to say, if you work outside of South Africa and you're a South African resident, remember the tax, how it works. South African residents are taxed on the worldwide income. Means it doesn't matter where you've generated your income.
Mm.
You know? Then there was no, okay, then he mentioned the issue of excess taxes. This is what Google is in trouble, you know, the alcohol and the tobacco.
Yes.
They are always the soft targets for increases in taxes. Even though yesterday we spoke about that alcohol ban, which resulted to taxes for gold, but we knew that it was going to introduce increases in these taxes. But now what he said, if I could quote from his budget speech, it appears as if he's not looking at this tax as tax that's going to yield additional revenue. However, he's concerned about the lives of the South Africans. He says the excessive alcohol consumption can lead to negative social and health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, this introduction of sin tax is meant to discourage people from continuing smoking and alcohol abuse.
Yes.
Whatever revenue they get from it is very superficial. So what I also had expected Google was maybe for him to touch on excess tax on luxury goods. Yeah, we're talking about the world, the important things like perfumes and cell phones. You know, why people need to be taxed? Because then if we are talking about increasing revenue, you know, the potential revenue there, but then I guess that would be an administrative burden to staff.
Exactly.
Because currently they are sitting with a lot of taxpayers, this is individuals plus entities and whatnot, and yet capacity is not that big in order to attend to everyone.
It's a lot to unpack, Sisibusi, and you're quite right. Maybe other areas that they should consider, especially just given how specifically the super wealthy are able to avoid tax legally and, of course, not wanting to put them under further pressure, but also understanding the pressure on ordinary consumers as well. Thank you so much for your time and providing some clarity to the numbers today. That's Busisiwe Mdletshe. She's the CEO of BTMT Capital and Group CEO of NetVest, guiding us in terms of the decline in the corporate income tax rate from 28% to 27%. But bear in mind, if you're a business owner, that only comes into effect on or after the 1st of April 2022, Afropolitans. But in terms of the individual or personal income tax, the bracket is what changes. So you and I will not be paying more tax in our individual capacity, but the bracket, however, has been increased and shifted to 5%. So think of it this way: the minimum that you can earn before you actually pay tax is around 205,000 rand previously. Now that shifts up slightly further to 216. It's the change in the bracket, not the actual rate of tax that you will pay. There's a lot more that we'll continue to analyze, Afropolitans, but we also want to make sure we get you home safely. So let's get our latest traffic update.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.